First, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to speak here today. My talk is about imposing a covariant ultraviolet cutoff on scalar fields for expanding FRW spacetimes. So in this talk, we'll actually introduce a covariant ultraviolet cutoff for physical scalar fields on an arbitrary spacetime manifold. But we'll apply this particular cutoff to fields on expanding FRW spacetimes and discuss some of the basic properties that fields obeying this ultraviolet cutoff have. Okay. So for intuition, I'm first going to discuss this cutoff for the simplest cases of a manifold, the real line. And then I'll discuss how it behaves for the simplest pseudo-Riemannian manifold flat spacetime before going to expanding FRW spacetimes. So I'm not going to say a lot about motivation for this, but I think it's generally expected in the physics community that there should be some sort of cutoff on the degrees of freedom for large modes, large frequencies of physical fields in nature, large frequency modes. And so we generally expect there should be some sort of ultraviolet cutoff or smallest observable length in nature. Now, the laws of physics are independent of coordinate system, so this means that any such an ultraviolet cutoff must be covariant. It cannot depend on the coordinate system. There have been many attempts to introduce a smallest length or ultraviolet cutoff in the literature, but as far as I'm aware, none of them are covariant, fully covariant. So again, the ultraviolet cutoff we are going to propose is going to be fully covariant, and I think you'll agree once you see it that it's very natural. So what is this ultraviolet cutoff for fields on the real line? So in the case of the real line, this ultraviolet cutoff is what you would expect. You just throw away the high Fourier frequencies. So given a field, you just throw away all its frequencies greater than some fixed positive value, A. So A is our ultraviolet cutoff, or in the engineering literature, this positive number A is called the band limit, so I'll sometimes call it the band limit. So this space, B of A, is the space of vector space, or the Hilbert space, of all functions whose Fourier transforms have support contained in the compact interval from minus A to A, and it's sometimes called the space of A band-limited fields, or functions. Okay, I've already said that. And so, yes, so any A band-limited field can be written as the Fourier transform of something that has support contained in the interval from minus A to A. There's a natural generalization, which we will discuss later, of these A band-limited fields to manifolds. But first, before we get there, I'd like to discuss some of the special properties that A band-limited fields on the real line have. This will give us some intuition for what to expect for the case of manifolds. Okay, so first of all, it's a fact that any A band-limited field has a finite density of degrees of freedom on the real line. So by that I mean if you have any A band-limited field, if you take, for example, any equidistantly spaced set of points Tn with spacing pi over the band limit or ultraviolet cutoff A, then as this formula shows, you can reconstruct this field at any point in the real line simply from the knowledge of the values it takes on this equidistantly spaced set of points Tn. So if you know it on that set of points Tn, which has no finite accumulation point, you know the field everywhere. And in fact, there's nothing special about this equidistantly spaced set of points lambda, this equidistantly spaced set of points Tn. It turns out that if you have any strictly increasing sequence of points in the real line, which is dense enough in a suitable sense, then any band-limited field, or field obeying our ultraviolet cutoff, is perfectly reconstructible from the values or its samples taken on that set of points. So any set of points or sequence of points with this property we will call a set of sampling for these A band-limited fields. So in this slide, I said that the set of points has to be dense enough to be a set of sampling. So let me make that more precise, what I mean by dense enough. So if you're given a set of points on the real line, you can define its density as follows. You let n of r be the minimum number of the points of that set lambda in any subinterval of length r on the real line. And then you take the limit of this quantity divided by r as r goes to infinity. And this is what we will call the density of our sequence of points lambda. So with this definition, there's this very nice result by this famous analyst Berling, which says that if lambda is a set of sampling for these A band-limited fields, these fields obeying our ultraviolet cutoff, then its density must be greater or equal to the band limit, or the ultraviolet cutoff A, divided by pi. And conversely, it will be a set of sampling
provided that its density is strictly greater than the band limit over pi.
Okay. So more generally, I just wanted to point out, you can consider more generally general frequency limited functions. So if you're given some compact subset of the real line, maybe it's two intervals or three intervals, then we define B of k to be the set of all functions whose Fourier transforms have support contained in k. And in this case, the necessity part of the previous theorem generalizes to this case as well. So here's a theorem which says that if you have a set of points which is, or a sequence of, a discrete sequence of points which is a set of sampling for these k frequency limited functions, then its density must be greater or equal to the Lebesgue measure or the volume of the set k divided by 2 pi. Okay, so the main point I had wanted you to take away from these two slides is simply that the minimum density of a set of sampling for k frequency limited functions is proportional to the volume of the set k on which the Fourier transforms of the functions have support. Okay. So that's all I wanted to say about the properties of fields obeying our ultraviolet cutoff on the real line. Now the question is, how can we generalize this ultraviolet cutoff for fields on manifolds in a covariant way? Well, we can do this pretty easily if we first make the following observation. So let delta here be the Laplacian for the real line, so minus the second derivative operator. Notice that its eigenfunctions are just the plane waves of frequency w, and so they're eigenfunctions with eigenvalue w squared. And then we see that the space of A band-limited fields is simply the subspace spanned by all these eigenfunctions to your Laplacian on your manifold, which is the real line, whose eigenvalues are less than or equal to A squared. So indeed, any A band-limited field can be written as an uncountable linear combination of these eigenfunctions or eigenvalues between 0 and A squared. So in analogy with the real line, we make this definition for an arbitrary manifold. So given any manifold with D'Alembertian, which I'll denote by a box, the space of A band-limited fields on the manifold will be that subspace spanned by the eigenfunctions of the D'Alembertian, whose eigenvalues lie between minus a squared and a squared. So I have to include negative eigenvalues because the D'Alembertian is not positive. But as you'll see, in the case where the manifold is just the real line, this reduces to the previous definition. Okay. And so basically the idea is that perhaps the set of physical fields for a given space-time manifold is one of these spaces of A band-limited fields for some positive value, positive frequency A, which should be on the order of the Planck frequency. So this is a fully covariant ultraviolet cutoff. It's defined using the spectrum of the D'Alembertian, which is independent of any coordinate system. And so now for the rest of the talk, we're going to investigate some of the basic properties that fields which obey this ultraviolet cutoff have. So let's start with the simplest pseudo-Riemannian manifold, flat spacetime. So here's our D'Alembertian for flat spacetime, minus d by dt squared plus the spatial Laplacian. And in this case, you see that the space of A band-limited fields, so given a set of coordinates, let's fix a set of coordinates, the set of all A band-limited fields in those coordinates is just the set of all fields whose Fourier transforms have frequencies obeying this inequality here. So the temporal frequency squared minus the spatial frequency vector squared, the magnitude of that must be less than or equal to a squared. So the set of all frequencies obeying that cutoff is described as the interior of this region here, bounded by these hyperbolas. Okay. So now, given a field which obeys this ultraviolet cutoff on our flat spacetime, let a field phi, let phi sub p here, so for let's take the spatial Fourier transform of phi, and let's fix the spatial frequency vector p. And we'll call this function, so this is, if for fixed p, this is a function of time, and we'll call this the fixed spatial mode p of our band-limited field. Okay. So one thing I want you to observe is that for any fixed spatial frequency p, this function phi sub p, this fixed spatial mode, has its temporal Fourier transform has support contained in a compact set. So is this a laser pointer? Yeah. So.
Okay. So you pass here.
Okay.
You have the pointer. If you do this, you'll pass.
Okay. Okay, thanks. All right, so for, say, for example, this fixed spatial frequency p here, this is actually, I guess, the magnitude of the spatial frequency vector. You see that its temporal frequencies of that fixed spatial mode are confined to this compact interval. And for example, for this fixed spatial frequency magnitude p here, its temporal frequencies are confined to the union of this little interval and this little interval here. So either way, we see that the temporal frequencies of a fixed spatial mode are confined to a compact set. And so by what we've discussed on the previous slide, this means that any fixed spatial mode can be reconstructed from the values it takes on some set of points in time, discrete set of points in time, which has finite density. And moreover, we recall from a few slides back that the necessary density of this set of points lambda is proportional to the volume of the set on which the temporal frequencies have support. And we see that this volume vanishes as the fixed spatial frequency gets larger and larger. So indeed, this interval and this interval, and for larger p, it's going to be an even smaller interval here and an even smaller interval here. And you see that the length of those intervals is going to go to zero as the fixed spatial frequency goes to infinity in magnitude. So just in summary, what we see is that fixed spatial modes of fields obeying our ultraviolet cutoff have a finite density of degrees of freedom in time. And in fact, the larger the spatial mode, the smaller the density of degrees of freedom in time it has. Okay. So I've already, so you might wonder how this can be consistent with, say, Lorentz invariance. So suppose you have a fixed spatial mode p, which can be reconstructed from the values it takes on this set of points in time tn at the xt coordinates. And suppose you have some other inertial observer whose coordinates are t prime and x prime. It's going to see this fixed set of points lambda as having a lower density because of length contraction, because of time dilation. And so you might wonder, well, this set of points is now less dense. How can we still reconstruct from it? Well, the fact is this inertial observer will also see our fixed spatial frequency as being a higher spatial frequency because of length contraction. And we see from the diagram there that larger spatial frequencies correspond to smaller bandwidth volume, so a less dense set of points suffices to reconstruct it. So it's all consistent with Lorentz invariance. Okay, so that's what happens in the case of flat spacetime. Now let's consider spacetime with curvature. So we're going to consider expanding FRW spacetimes. So in this case, this is our line element. Here's our D'Alembertian. We have a scale factor A. Okay. And as before, given a field which obeys our ultraviolet cutoff on our spacetime, we're going to let field phi, we're going to let phi sub k be the spatial Fourier transform of phi, and we're going to fix the co-moving spatial momentum frequency k. And then we're going to let bk of m and a be the space of all fixed co-moving spatial modes of fields which obey our ultraviolet cutoff on our manifold. So after a spatial Fourier transform, our D'Alembertian can be written as this. And if we fix the spatial frequency vector k, then this is just a one-dimensional Sturm-Liouville differential operator acting on that Hilbert space with that measure there. And so basically, studying the spatial modes, or the fixed co-moving spatial modes of fields which obey our ultraviolet cutoff, amounts to studying spectral properties of these differential operators. And so we can apply all sorts of results from that theory. Okay, so we make some simplifying assumptions on our manifold. So first of all, we assume that time is in the interval from Ti to Tf. So Ti is the start time, Tf is the end time. And we assume always that the end time is finite, which I think is physically, I'll wrap it up. It is physically okay because we expect that inflation only happened for a finite time period. And we assume the scale factor is positive, and that either we have a finite start time as well, as is the case for power law, or we assume that the scale factor is integrable over the time region, which is the case, for example, for de Sitter. So it turns out that these assumptions actually imply that our fixed spatial mode actually doesn't just have a finite density. It actually has a finite number of degrees of freedom in time. And this finite number is what we call n sub k. And so we can ask how this number of degrees of freedom in time depends on the magnitude of the spatial mode. And it turns out that the larger k is, the fewer degrees of freedom in time it has. So in fact, there's a large enough k such that for any spatial mode k with magnitude greater than capital K, our spatial mode has at most 2 degrees of freedom in time. So this is as in the case of flat space time, where larger spatial modes have fewer degrees of freedom in time. Okay. And I should mention that the exact value of this const of the number of degrees of freedom large spatial modes has depends on the boundary conditions we choose in our time interval to make our D'Alembertian self-adjoint. Okay. So that's pretty much all I wanted to say. So just in summary, we've discussed properties of scalar fields on expanding spacetimes which obey a certain ultraviolet cutoff. And we see that large fixed spatial comoving modes have fewer temporal degrees of freedom and are essentially frozen out. So a natural question which may have occurred to you and which I haven't answered is, well, how does this cutoff affect the dynamics of scalar field theories? Does it affect our predictions for the cause of microwave background spectrum? Can we come up with experimentally testable predictions? And that is something that we're calculating right now. I'm along with, it's being spearheaded by Aidan Chatwin-Davies and Akeem Kemp at the University of Waterloo, and I'm helping out. And that'll be the subject of the next talk. So thanks for listening.